There we go. Good. So tonight, and this is probably one that you've heard probably quite a few times actually about in the stories of the in Sunday school and things when it comes to the Pool of Bethesda. And so that's what we're going to talk tonight about for a little bit, the Pool of Bethesda. And I'm going to show you some different things. I'll point it out on the map. And in fact, let me get my pointer finger. I haven't gotten to use that in a while. But that way I can at least be out of the way. But here is the Temple Mount, all of this area here. And of course, Temple Mount stops. Let me get my bearings here. The Temple Mount stops about right here. This is the Antonia Fortress. And so the wall continues on. Obviously, it goes all the way around the entire city. And you also remember that the city of Jerusalem was actually quite a bit smaller during the time of Christ. Herod expanded it after about 10 years after Christ died, which is why we say that Christ was actually crucified outside the walls of the city, even though that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is inside the walls of the city today. It wasn't during the time of Christ. But the Pool of Bethesda is right about in this area right here, and I'll show you that on the map from the top. And I'm actually, here, let me remind you about this. This is our scale model of the city of Jerusalem, and this is at the Israel Museum. I told you that this is somewhere around 43,000 square foot model. It's a 1 to 50 scale model of what Jerusalem would have been like in the first century. Not necessarily at the time of Christ, but in the first century. Obviously, Christ lived in the first century, but this model was done the way Jerusalem would have been 10 years after Jesus' crucifixion. But let me draw you into this a little bit and show you the Temple Mount, all right? And this is the Temple Mount. Of course, that's Solomon's Temple. Now it's the Dome of the Rock, and that's the way that it's easily recognizable today. But just off to the, that would be the north. Very good, thank you. Just to the north of that is where the Pool of Bethesda is. And this is pointed out right on here. This arrow is pointing to where the pools would have been. Now, it doesn't really look much like that at all today. A lot of things have changed because of the Byzantine Empire, because of the Crusaders, and because of a lot of different things. And really, you have to go far below the surface to see anything that was there originally. But they've done a lot of excavation. They've seen a lot of things there. Now, it had a large pool that the shepherds used, and it was called the Sheep Pool because it was actually very close to the Sheep Gate, which would have been the gate that the shepherds used to go in and out of the city with their sheep and everything else. And so that pool would have been, it was used for several different things, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But one of them was a collection spot for water for the sheep. But let me just kind of give you a little bit of a visual on this. All right, this is a tremendous map, and I can't even remember where I found it. But this map, that's like a little corner of the actual map that I have. You can blow it up, and so I'm going to show you this map quite a bit. But to remind us where we're at here, what's over here? Does anybody remember? Mount of Olives. Very good. What do you call this right here? Kidron Valley, very good. And this whole area here is the Temple Mount, okay? This area right here, which we have not talked about yet, I've pointed out a couple times, but this is the Southern Steps, okay? We're going to talk about that a little bit more in detail. This right here is the Western Wall, okay? And you can't really see, it's called the Western Wall. Sometimes it's been called the Wailing Wall or the Weeping Wall. Our guide told us that the Jews don't like to call it the Wailing Wall. And I don't know exactly why it got that name. I mean, I do know why it got that name, but I don't know why they don't like it necessarily. That's what they're doing. They're weeping over Jerusalem and over the fact that they can't get to the Temple Mount. We're not going to talk about the Western Wall today, but I am going to show you this so that you have a visual of it for later on. But you see where this Western Wall is and how close that is to the actual Temple Mount. This is the Dome of the Rock, but this is where the temple used to stand. So if you're looking at it right here, okay, here's the Temple Mount. This is where the temple actually stood. And I think if you go behind that, okay, there's the Dome of the Rock right now. This was Solomon's temple that stood on top of that. Okay, Solomon's temple here, Herod's temple here, and then now today it's the Dome of the Rock. And we're going to talk a lot more about that next week when we do that. I'm just trying to give you a little bit of helping you get your bearings with this. But the Western Wall is the closest they can get and actually pray for the third temple, for the Messiah to come, and that's what they're waiting for. Now, according to the Bible, we know that they're not waiting for the Messiah, they're waiting for the Antichrist to come, But they're going to see the Antichrist as their Messiah. He's going to build the third temple and everything else, which I've mentioned this quite a few times as well. They're not far from being able to do that. In fact, they'll be ready in a couple months. Less than 2 months, they could have the entire temple built and be sacrificing on the Temple Mount when the Antichrist comes, or the Messiah, as they think, and that's what they're looking for. But this circle right here is actually where the Pool of Bethesda is at. So it's not very far outside of the actual Temple Mount area. And this is I've got several different pictures of what people think it looked like based on some of the evidence that we have. Nobody knows exactly what it looked like because nothing is there that shows us. And of course, they didn't have photography back then, so nobody actually knows what the Pool of Bethesda looks like. But Bethesda, Beth, means house of, like Bethlehem, right? House of bread. Bethesda means house of mercy. And for many, many years, it was associated with a place of healing. There's that picture a little bit closer up to let you see what it looked like. But it's not, you know, when you think about the Pool of Bethesda, it's not a swimming pool. It's not a recreation center. All right, it wasn't used for that. And I don't know if they had any place that was like that in the old town Jerusalem. But, you know, we think of, maybe sometimes when you think of Pool of Bethesda, it's a place where people are going to kind of hang out and whatever else. It was not that. It was a place of healing. It was a place of ritual cleansing, which we'll talk about in just a minute. But according to the Gospel of John, which we'll get to in just a second, Bethesda was a bathing pool, had 5 porticos and porches, and the remains of that you can still see today. And so I'm going to show you some of the remains that are there. And again, a lot of these remains don't really show you what it looks like because a lot of it is far below the surface. Jerusalem is a tell. Do you remember what a tell is? A tell is a man-made hill, basically, that's been built upon and destroyed and built upon and destroyed and built upon and destroyed and built upon and destroyed. And so it's high up, and there's layers and layers and layers and layers of civilizations underneath of it, because as they got destroyed, they just used what was there and built on top of it. And then that got destroyed, and they used what was there and built on top of it. So many things in Jerusalem are actually well under the street level today because of how many times it's been built upon. But again, that's kind of the same example and I'll show you that a little bit closer up. But there's the lame man that the Bible talks about in the book of John, and we'll get to that story in just a second. But the Pool of Bethesda was a place where a lot of people came to be healed during the time of Jesus. So let's jump into John chapter 5 and verse number 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, why did he go up to Jerusalem? Yeah, Jerusalem was quite a bit above sea level, right? Especially if you consider where he was at in Galilee and maybe the Dead Sea area, Jericho. He's going up to Jerusalem. Now, there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having 5 porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And so you can see, and think about this story. I thought about what an amazing thing that is, you know. One person gets in. And it didn't say that the angel, they knew the day that the angel was coming, and they were all standing at the edge of that pool waiting to jump in, right? It just said a certain season, and so I'm sure it was kind of one of those things where every day they were waiting in anticipation for this angel to show up so they could be the first one into the pool. But you think about an impotent man. What does impotent mean? Can't walk, right? How is he going to get to the pool? The only thing he can do is drag himself there, and certainly somebody that's got a little bit less of a disease is going to be able to get to the water before he does. And so a sick man had been going there for many, many years. In verse number 5, and a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. Now, doesn't necessarily say that he was born with it, although he could have been, and he could have been 38 years old, or it could have been something that he developed when he was a little bit older, and, you know, he had this infirmity for 38 years. The Bible doesn't really tell us exactly what it is that happened, and in fact, for this guy, how he became an impotent man, but he was there, and maybe even sitting by the Pool of Bethesda for 38 years. So And I'm going to show you, we're going through this story, but you're going to start seeing pictures. This is what it looks like today. And you'll understand this in a little bit. I'm going to show you a couple diagrams. But this whole area here is part of the pool of Bethesda. And then here and here, southern pool on this side, northern pool on this side. I'm showing you that now because I'm going to give you some diagrams, but at least you'll have a little bit of an idea of what you're looking at before we get there. Well, then in verse number 6, when Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. So Jesus heals this sick man. And of course, it took a lot of faith on his part. If you couldn't walk and Jesus said, Rise, take up your bed and walk, and you go to take up your bed and you can't walk, right? How are you going to know if you're able to walk unless you stand up? Well, that's exactly what this man did. He stood up and he was able to walk. And it had been 38 years since he had been able to do that. Well, Christ then reveals to this man why he had been sick for so long. In verse number 10, the Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It's not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. How insensitive, right? This guy for 38 years, and you can't tell me that most of them didn't know this man, right? They had probably seen him being carried back and forth to the pool. 38 years, you're going to recognize these people, right? Jerusalem was not that big. And here, this guy takes up his bed and walks for the first time in 38 years. And what's the first thing they said? Man, it's great that you're able to walk again. No, they said, what are you doing carrying your bed on the Sabbath, right? These Pharisees, I'll tell you what. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Jesus told me to do it. That's why I'm carrying my bed on the Sabbath. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. Which gives you the indication that this man probably was not impotent from birth. Something happened as a result of the way that he was living. Now Jesus doesn't say that in particular, but I don't know why Jesus went into the pool area and healed only this man. Now, he might have healed more, but we're only told that he healed this guy. And then he got out of there because there was a huge crowd there, and for whatever reason, he wasn't there to heal everybody, apparently. But he finds this guy a little bit later on, and he says, Listen, I made you walk. I gave you the ability to walk. Now go and sin no more. Something a whole lot worse is going to happen to you. Gives you the indication that this man was in that condition because of some sin that he had committed. I don't know, but why would Jesus tell him that if he didn't intend to get that point across? Well, immediately after that, and this is so interesting, Jesus made himself equal with God. Now, he did that in several different places. Philippians is one of those passages that Jesus did that. But in verse number 15, the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore, the Jews sought no more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. And of course, they hated that. They absolutely hated the fact that Jesus had made himself equal with God, and that's one of the reasons why they wanted to kill him. He was blaspheming the name of God. He was calling himself God. Now, this is a diagram that I'm going to show you here. So the part that you were just looking at is this part right here. Okay, this whole area right here. But the pool, and I'll read this so you can get an idea, but the pool that can be seen today is the corner of the southern pool. It's significantly below, and I kind of explained this already, but Jerusalem is a tell, and so since the days of Christ, it's been destroyed and built on top of and destroyed and built on top of. And so what you're seeing today is really not much of what was there then, but what's been built on top of that. And so you can actually, and I'm going to show you some pictures of this, but you can go down quite a ways and actually see this part. You can go down, and I think it's somewhere in this area right here, maybe somewhere right around here. You can go down a long set of steps that goes well below the ground and actually see the corner of the southern pool. I'm going to show you some of those things, but this might be a little bit of a helpful diagram for you as well. So the Northern Pool, and I'm going to talk about this, but the Northern Pool was about 700 BC. The Southern Pool was about 200 BC. The Healing Baths, and that area that you were looking at there, in fact, I can go back to it for just a second. This area here was the Healing Baths. And that, you know, like I told you, that Bethesda had been associated with healing for a long time. Then the Roman Temple comes along in 135. We'll talk about that in just a minute. The Byzantine Basilica was in the pink area right there. The Crusader Chapel, 1100 AD, Church of St. Anne, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, in 1138 AD. And then that green area is the part where you can actually go down and see the pool. You can see the steps. You can see a lot of the things that were very much probably a part of the actual pool of Bethesda itself. But there's a little marker that shows you what the Southern Pool, that's the Southern Pool area. And it's, I mean, you see how far down that is. You were standing at kind of street level here and far down below that. And I'll show you some more of those pictures in just a minute. But it's kind of hard to get an idea of the depth of that. If you could actually see a person standing down there, I would say that it's hard to tell. That a person would probably be about the size of this, maybe. You know, if a person was laying down, that's like a little... just a little pillar, but if a person was laying down, that's about the size that a person would be. That's how far down it is and how big it actually is. And I'm going to show you this a little bit closer up as well, but I'm going to point this out so you'll know where it fits in when I show you the picture. These are steps that would be leading down into that pool area. You can hardly see them because they're covered in weeds and grass, but when that grass is not growing, it's a lot more visible. So I'm going to show you a few pictures of that as well. Again, kind of the same area. You see this fence right here? That's pretty much your street level today. So see how far down that is compared to where it used to be. And I'm sure it was probably a little bit below the surface anyway because it was a pool and it had to be lower for them to be able to collect water in and everything else. But it's far below the surface today. This, and I mentioned that we went down, but you see the corner of the Southern Pool well below the surface. I mean, it was pitch black in there. That's what this light that's shining in there, I think, is just from a camera flash, far below the surface there. That's the corner of the Southern Pool. Now, this is the history of that. Around 700 BC, so 700 years before Christ, during the time of King Hezekiah, there was a large water storage pool that was built there to capture water from that area. And it was used for the purification of the animals. Now remember where this is at in relation to the actual temple, right? It's not very far from the temple itself. Here's the temple. Here's the Pool of Bethesda. So, you know, for them to do the purification and all of that stuff, it was not that great of a distance, especially when you consider, and I'll show you this in a little bit later, like where the Pool of Siloam was. The Pool of Siloam was quite a distance from the temple. So the Pool of Bethesda really was not all that far. There's a central cistern that was there to help collect some of that water as well. All of it's just, and you can't, there's a lot of places where you can actually go down and kind of get into the ruins and stuff. This was one of the places where you can't just because it's so deep. And it had to be because that's where they were collecting all that water. So this is, again, kind of that same diagram. I'll point this out so you can see this because we're going to talk about this in a second. This is St. Anne's Church, and I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit. But the pictures that you were looking at were basically standing from here looking this way, and this Southern Pool, that really deep area where I showed you where the steps were, those steps are right here. And that railing that I just pointed out was basically right here. So when they talk about the visible part today, that's the part that you can see, but this entire area would have been the whole Southern Pool, and obviously it's been built on top of. So you have to go well below the surface, and that was the picture that I just showed you. You have to go well below the surface to get to that Southern Pool. So the first one was built in about 700 BC. 500 years later, in 200 BC, another one was built next to that. And the first one was the Southern Pool. The second one was the Northern. But both of those pools had water that was flowing in and out. So what they was known as living water that they had in them, because there's basically no way for it to get stagnant, like the Dead Sea, right? That's just dead water because there's nothing flowing out of it. So anyway, that's what they called it. But there's the steps. and I didn't take this picture because this would have been at a time when there wasn't a lot of greenery in Israel. But they were also used as mikvahs, is what they're called. It was close to the Temple Mount. There was a gate close by that was known as the Sheep Gate that led up to the Temple Mount. So these mikvahs would have been places where they would go down into the water and cleanse themselves before they could go up to the temple. There was a long purification process. You couldn't just march into the temple because you felt like going. You had to go through that ritual cleansing process and make sure you were clean before you went into the temple. And because this area was so close to where the temple was, they were used as mikvahs. They were cleansing. They were purification type pools. There's that picture just a little bit closer up. If you couldn't see it, but you notice. So is this the exact same? Obviously, this is an artist's rendering of what they think it would have looked like. But there's the steps that are going down into that pool, and then there's those exact same steps that would be going down into the pool there as well. So again, that's an artist's drawing of what they think it would have looked like, but they're probably not too far off. So in the first century B.C., now this is prior to the birth of Christ, we're talking basically 99 to 0, there were healing baths that were built there dedicated to the Greek false god Asclepius, and I think that's how you say it, maybe Asclepius, but either way, Asclepius. There was a lot of things that were being built by the Romans during that time that had nothing to do with God, had nothing to do with Jesus. Of course, Jesus hadn't even come then. They didn't believe him anyway, but they were still all about the ritual, you know, Old Testament rule and everything else, but they were also being ruled by the Romans. And so the Romans built all kinds of things there, and when the Roman Emperor Hadrian rebuilt Jerusalem, and we're going to talk about this quite a bit when we get to the Temple Mount, in AD 135 or 135 AD, Hadrian came in, and he destroyed Jerusalem. And because there were... He was trying to get rid of anything that had to do with Jesus, anything that had to do with God, anything that had to do with the Jewish religion. He wanted to not just get rid of it, but wipe it off the face of the earth so that nobody would even remember it. And so he changed the name of Jerusalem to Aelia Capitolina, and he changed the name of Israel to Palestine or Palestina, which was a Philistine name. So when you call Israel Palestine, It's not anything to do with what the Bible says. Palestine was a name that was given to Israel to try to completely erase the name of Israel from the map and from memory, and Aelia Capitolina to erase Jerusalem from anybody's memory. And so Hadrian built a large temple to Asclepius and Serapis, which were the Greek false gods of healing and believed deity. And so all of those baths in that area, not long after the time of Christ, would have been dedicated to these false Roman gods. And Hadrian was trying to do everything he could to get rid of the name of Christ. And so after Christianity became the state religion of the Roman Empire, who did that, by the way, do you remember? Constantine in the 300s, I think 336 AD. I could be wrong by a couple of years, but after that became the official religion of the Roman Empire, the temple that Hadrian had erected was torn down. A large Byzantine basilica was built over the ruins in around 450 AD. So again, you can see how this is happening. That gets buried, they build another temple on top of it. And then along comes the Crusaders, and they tear that down, and they build another buildings and churches on top of it. And then that comes down, and more things go on top. And that's how it happens over the course of thousands of years, which is what you have here. So close to that Byzantine basilica was a grotto, and this is St. Anne's Church, and you can kind of recognize this is where those baths would have been, but it's dedicated to the place that was believed to be where Mary's parents, Anne and Joachim, lived, and where Mary, the mother of Jesus, was born. And I say believed because nobody knows. The Bible doesn't say anything about it. I think there is one of the apocryphal books that actually mentions this idea of Mary's parents living there and Mary being born in that area, and so because in a lot of the Catholic Bibles, the Apocrypha is included in it. They would kind of take that as part of their tradition or as part of their, you know, gospel, so to speak. But AD 1138, the Basilica of St. Anne was erected over the site of the grotto that was believed by the Crusaders to be the birthplace of Mary. And of course, if you know Catholicism, then they hold Mary in a very high place. I mean, they put Mary basically on the same level as Jesus. And so to have these holy places where Mary would have been is the same to them. A lot of those things would have been the same as being places where Jesus was at. So it was a very holy place to them. But the church is dedicated to Anna and Joachim, who, according to tradition, lived there and the site where their daughter Mary was born in a cave that's located under that basilica. So, and this is actually really interesting. This church was built in 1138, and it's one of the most well-preserved Crusader churches anywhere. But especially in Jerusalem, and it's essentially they've done some renovations on that church to keep it from crumbling and falling down. But essentially, it's in the same condition that it was in when the Crusaders were there. So this is the inside of it. It's got some amazing acoustics inside that building. And the day that we went, we were not with our whole group. We were just kind of running around Jerusalem, and it was a free day that we had, so we were trying to see as many different things as we could see that was not part of our tour. But there was another group that was in there, and I forget what song they were singing. It was a hymn that they were singing, and boy, the sound inside that building was just amazing. And, you know, we just had like I think six of us, so we were not going to get up there and sing a special or anything like that. But in 1192, after the fall of the Crusader Kingdom, Saladin turned that church into a theological school for the study of the Quran, which on the outside of that building, it actually commemorates that above the entrance to the church. So, Here's kind of, you start to kind of get down a little bit, but there's some of the Byzantine walls that were reused by the Crusaders. So the Byzantines built all of their stuff, and then the Crusaders came in and took over them, and, you know, a lot of this stuff had fallen into disrepair. So they said, well, here's half a wall, let's continue to build on it, and, you know, we'll do what we need to do. And so the Crusaders built castles and walls and churches everywhere in Jerusalem, and not just in Jerusalem, all over the place. I mean, you see them all up and down the coast, and I've showed you some of those already. But this is kind of some more of those Crusader ruins. Point this out and kind of give you a picture of it here. We're down now. St. Anne's Church is up here. Okay, this is, you know, there's a walkway and everything right here. This is the area that we were looking at before, way up from the top. So this is down now, and you can kind of walk through some of this. But a lot of those are Crusader walls that were rebuilt from the Byzantine period. There's some more of that, different things that they built up. And again, so just to kind of give you this, this is what we were just looking at. We were down in this area here looking at those things. There's St. Anne's Church. There's all these Byzantine and Crusader ruins inside there. So, like I said, very, very little of what it would have actually looked like during the time of Christ when he went in there and healed this man in the pool is actually there, because a lot of it is below the surface today. But there's some more of those ruins. And to kind of put this into perspective again, St. Anne's Church is standing right next to us right here. And all the rest of those ruins that we were just in are down here. The mikvahs are right here. The corner of the southern pool back up these steps and just over in this area here. So it's hard to kind of get a picture of what it would have looked like back in that time. And they you know, they've got these artist renderings and things like that based on some of the things that they've gone down and seen, but none of it's exposed. So it's hard. It really is hard to see it. But let me mention this, and then we'll be done for tonight. There's a few things here, but Accardo in Jerusalem, and I didn't want to get into the Temple Mount and not be able to finish, so I figured I would just show you this. This is actually this is part of the history of Jerusalem, and it's actually very, very interesting. But there was a major Jewish rebellion against the Romans. It was called the Bar Kokhba Revolt, and that was in around 132 AD, which, if you know that Hadrian came and destroyed everything in 135, you know that the revolt was not successful, and that's exactly what happened. But Hadrian destroyed a lot of Jerusalem. He changed the orientation of Jerusalem. He renamed the city Aulia Capitolina. He named the country Palestine, the Philistine name, but again, and I just mentioned a lot of this already, but his desire was to wipe any remembrance of Israel off of the map. And so you remember that he did this as well. I showed you this picture already. He desecrated the place of the crucifixion and the burial of Jesus Christ because he was trying to wipe that out as well. Now, it had been venerated by Christians for 100 years by that point. They had been going to that place. They knew that's where Jesus was buried and resurrected. And so he built this large platform in the quarry, and he built a large temple that he dedicated to Jupiter and Venus. But you remember when Constantine came back through in the 300s and essentially made Christianity the official religion, he tore that temple down and built what became the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And so that's, again, that's how we know that that's the place where Jesus was crucified and where he was buried, because Hadrian did this only 100 years after, because he was trying to desecrate anything that had to do with Christianity, anything that happened had anything to do with Judaism. He was trying to get rid of all of that. But he laid out the new city of Jerusalem so that the major streets led to this temple of Jupiter and Venus. And again, the city hadn't been laid out in that way, but they were over the remains of the crucifixion, over the tomb of Christ, and so he constructed a main street, and the Romans did this almost everywhere they went. They constructed these cardos, is what they called, cardo maximus, a main street, essentially is what that means, but heart or center of. And so all the way down, and these are the remains of that, cardo was a Latin name that was given to the main street in ancient Roman cities, and you can see it. Some of that's been rebuilt, but a lot of it is old. And this is what they've done in a lot of places in Jerusalem, not just in Jerusalem, but I guess in Israel. And they probably do it in a lot of these ancient cities as well. They find all these ruins, and they take the ruins and use the ruins to rebuild it the way that it probably would have been. So the stones, the pillars, and all of those things are pretty much the original pillars, but not necessarily exactly the way that it was, and certainly not the way that they found it. Nobody would go see it if it was just a pile of rocks. Right, so they want people to visit and honestly get a visual of what they think it would have looked like, and so they rebuild some of these things using the original stuff. So here is part of that cardo. Now this is actually really interesting. This was our guide, but evidence for the existence of this ancient cardo was found on a mosaic map of Jerusalem. And here's a closer up picture of that mosaic map. I put him in there so you can see how big the map actually was. But here's this map, and you can see right down there through the middle, right here, would have been where the cardo was at. This is the main street running through there, and of course the cardo would have been where a lot of different people had their goods that they were selling and buying and selling, and it would be like our main street today, you know, Broad Street. This is their Broad Street, Cardo Maximus, except they made it Roman, and they had all the pillars and everything else that were in there, so the map was actually discovered in a Byzantine church in the mountains of Jordan. And that map then was used, the reason they had it there is because it would have been used as a tool to teach them this about the city of Jerusalem and what it looked like. And so they actually had a mosaic map. I mean, how amazing is that anyway? But here's a kind of like, I say a reconstruction, but all of these things are basically, this was a map that was there where we were at, but just kind of showing what it says in Hebrew, Holy City of Jerusalem, the Eastern Cardo, the Maria Nea Church, Ephrata, the Lot of Benjamin. That's all of these, go back to this map, all of these things are labeled. And the reason it was labeled is because it was like a map that people would learn so they would know how to get through the city and everything else. And so that's what it was. But here again is the that map that I was just showing you about. But the cardo begins at the Damascus Gate, which is all the way over here. In fact, that's the gate that we went in and out of the most, because the hotel that we were staying in was somewhere right in this area right here. It was just kind of a pretty short walk to get into the Damascus Gate. But there's the Damascus Gate in the north, and it ran south through the old city, and it ended at the Zion Gate. That's how long that cardo maximus would have been. Just a massive, massive thoroughfare, if you will. But the north side of the cardo from Damascus Gate to David Street was built during the Roman period in Jerusalem. And then the south side was built in the 6th century during the time of the Byzantine Empire. It extends all the way along the western side of the Jewish quarter. And I'm going to talk to you about that a little bit later, so I'm not even going to get into it right now. But this is actually pretty interesting. You can see exactly what the cardo would have looked like. These are the original pillars. And so this would have been the main street, and on both sides there would have been these little stalls, just like this. And these are part of the original bedrock of the stalls that were there. People would have set up the stuff that they were selling, and people could have just walked down that street to buy anything or trade or do whatever they wanted to do. So that, again, and then maybe that's a little bit better picture, because you can, you know, zoomed in, you can see a little bit better some of these different stalls and the way that they would have had things set up. So back to that picture again, this is a painting on the wall inside, and you can see the pillars, and all those pillars that I showed you basically go down this way, But this is what it would have looked like. Just a little stall with a little cutout in it. So they had ovens. They had lots of different things down there. And people would have just been walking up and down that cardo, buying and selling and doing whatever. So all the way along this, I'm just going to show you these real quick. They have these are mosaics, actually. And if you zoom in, maybe you can see it a little bit better. But, I mean, what a amazing mosaics that they were just done with little pieces of tile. You know, I mean, it looks like a painting. But all the way along this cardo, they have this reconstruction basically to kind of show you what it would have looked like. So I'm going to do that, and then we'll be done. But this would have been a glassware store, and you can see the guy in the center is actually blowing glass. I don't know if you can see him right here. This guy right here is blowing glass, and that's how they would have made it, you know, all their different vases and pieces of glass and all of that kind of stuff. And they know that because a similar panel was discovered in the ancient mansion in Caesarea. Here's another one, musical instruments that they would buy and sell. I'll zoom in a little bit so you can see those, but all those different instruments that they played, and so that would have been a little stall where they sold those. This is a jewelry store, luxurious silversmith stall, and you can see the jewelers there and the ladies that are in there buying the jewelry. This one is a fabric store. A lot of the nobility would have been the ones that bought these things here because, at least in this depiction, that's more of like royal type of fabric that was being sold. Fruits and vegetables. And obviously you can see the produce that they had there in Israel, but just all the different fruits and vegetables that were being sold there. This is a livestock store. A lot of the domesticated livestock that they sold, all of those. Spices, and honestly, you walk through the city of Jerusalem, and a lot of it still looks exactly like that today. Now, not necessarily in baskets like that, but they had their, you know, they have their stalls laid out there, and just mounds of spices, and you just go in there and buy it, and fill up a bag, and pay for it by the pound or whatever else, so a lot of that even still looks like it would have then. This one is a pottery store, and they would have used that pottery for cooking and storage and a lot of other different things, but that's where they could buy the pottery, and a lot of them would have actually, in fact, you see this, some of the mosaic is missing, so you can't really tell, but this guy right here is actually making the pottery in the store, and that's the way a lot of them would have done. If they were selling baskets, they would have been weaving it. If they were selling, you know, glass, like the one you saw, they would have been making that glass in that little stall area right there. So now, I've only got a couple left to show you, but this is actually part of the old cardo. The bedrock, and this is actually quite a bit below the surface of Jerusalem now, but it was brought in during the rebuilding. This is a little bit closer up of a pillar that was actually part of the old cardo, and like I said, most of it today is you can't see it because it's all below the city, and to expose that, you'd literally have to destroy the entire modern city of Jerusalem because everything's built on top of what's there. And so you can't see it, but they have little sections like this where you can kind of go down below and see some of these different things and actual, you know, original columns and things like that. And this is kind of what their cardo looks like today. I'm going to show you a lot of pictures of the actual city of Jerusalem, but you see, you walk down through the streets inside the actual city of Jerusalem itself, and all the way down, stalls with people in there selling, you know, everything you can think of. And every quarter, there's four different quarters in the city of Jerusalem, and I'm trying to remember this. There's the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, and the Armenian. I was going to say Arabic, and I knew that wasn't right. The Armenian quarter. And every one of them, when you cross kind of the line between those two quarters, you can tell that you're in a different place. But all part of the city of Jerusalem, but they're all selling different things, and they all want you to buy it, so you know, I'll be honest with you, when you get into that Muslim quarter and things, you feel really singled out. You feel like, I don't belong here. What am I doing, you know? And honestly, the Damascus Gate was the same way. We were told, basically, don't make eye contact with people around that area. Honestly, I felt like, you know, they tell you don't make eye contact with a dog because it might, you know, attack you. That's kind of like, and we were walking through there, and there were some Muslims that were actually yelling at some people who were actually just sitting outside the Damascus Gate. Basically, keep moving. You're allowed to come in here because we want you to buy our stuff, but this is not your place. You don't belong here. Keep moving. Keep going. And so, again, I'm going to show you a lot of pictures of the Damascus Gate and the old city, Jerusalem. I've got some videos to show you and everything else as well. But we're going to get into the Temple Mount next week. We got a couple. I'm going to show you the city of David. It's pretty interesting. They believe that they found where David's palace would have been. You know the whole story of David and Bathsheba? You're standing on the top of where David's palace would be, and you can see all the houses below you, and it just brings that whole thing perfectly together where you can understand exactly how that story would have played out. And so I'm going to show you that too, but probably two or three more weeks, and we're going to be completely done with it, but a couple really interesting weeks before we get to the end. So don't want to miss it. Come back next week, kids, and I'll tell you the rest of the story. Remember that in Sunday school? I'm like, I'm going to be here next week anyway. Just tell me now what happens, you know? I'm not skipping Sunday school. I'm going to be here. I just want to know how the story ends. That's kind of what this is. So anyway, I'll tell you how the story ends, but I don't want to be here till midnight, and I don't think you do either. So let's pray, and then we'll be done. Father, we love you. Again, we thank you for your goodness, and I thank you that we have these things available to us to help us to understand the Bible better. I pray that you just give us a greater desire to study and to learn your word. I pray that these things would be a help to us as we look at these stories in the Bible and see exactly how they fit in. And again, we'll thank you for all that you do for us in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, let's stand and we'll close in our